You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, February 24th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, surprise, surprise, Bibi Netanyahu has a Bill O'Reilly problem when it comes to talking about Iranian aspirations for nuclear weapons. Meanwhile, a prominent climate denial scientist has a Bibi Netanyahu Bill O'Reilly problem when it comes to revealing who pays for his climate denial reports. And it appears that the secretary of the VA has a Bibi Netanyahu, Bill O'Reilly, and climate denial scientist problem in referring to his military credentials. Also on the program today, Chris Christie's sputtering presidential aspirations sputter more as a judge rejects his attempts to break a contract with public sector workers. And I can only I will only need to read one sentence for this story on the head of the HSBC Bank. For you get the whole story. You don't need to know anything else. And Mitch McConnell is going to attempt to change tactics as a way of making sure that the Department of Homeland Security gets funded by the deadline, which is just 3 or 4 days away, I guess. Friday. I don't know what day today is. All that and more, ladies and gentlemen, on today's program. Oh, also, an Idaho lawmaker explains why the neck bone is perhaps connected to the vagina bone. I'm not exactly sure how that works. All that and more on today's program. Yes, folks, I am back from a week-long, ostensibly a vacation. It was a we had a couple of pre-records last week and a couple of best ofs last week. I was in significantly sunnier California than where we are now. I'd say a 50 to 60 degree differential. I spent the week shooting an episode of Marin, Mark Marin's TV show on IFC, wherein I played a variant of myself, as seen, or as I guess, as seen through the eyes of Mark Maron and his staff of lackey writers. And then I actually also recorded, finally got into his garage and recorded an episode of WTF. Now, he wasn't there. I just sort of surmised what questions he would ask, and I just went forward, and hopefully they'll cut it up and put it into a program, and maybe he'll voice it after the fact. But it was a lot of fun. I'll talk more about it on the funner half of the program. That's where those type of things are best suited. Yes. And I will, yeah, I'll tell all the trials and tribulations, including how my flight got severely delayed. But I did get a little bit of a buyout, so that was good on my ticket. All that worked out well. But let's go right to this story about the Department of Homeland Security. As you recall, back in December, we had the Cromnibus budget deal. Why Cromnibus? Because it was an omnibus budget with one segment carved out to be a continuing resolution. In other words, we got a new budget for the U.S. government, except for the Department of Homeland Security, which was funded only through a continuing resolution. In other words, at the present budget level. It's basically a punt on that part of it. To February 27th, which will be the last day this week where the Senate and House can act on the Department of Homeland Security budget. And, of course, the reason why that part was punted was because the president thinks he's a czar or something, and that he can actually exercise executive action when it comes to prosecutorial discretion. We have a limited amount of money in which to attempt to deport undocumented immigrants in this country and workers. And the president simply codified what is quite obvious, that we are not going to deport 11 million people. We only have the ability to deport approximately 400,000 any given year. And so he basically developed a set of rules that said that of those 11 million people, about 5 million, maybe 4 million, are such a low priority that we can basically tell them, come out of the shadows, register, and you will not be deported. Now, in 3 years from now, or I guess 2 years from now, President Cruz or President Walker or President Bush, or for that matter, President Clinton or Sanders, one can only hope, could theoretically repeal that executive order and make a new list of priorities as to who should be subject to deportation. Nevertheless, because of the freedom-loving and law and order and rule of law Republicans and make up a constitution Republicans, that they had this continuing resolution. The House has attempted to defund this program, the Deferred Action Program. Of course, the funding comes from fines and whatnot, but they have attempted to, I guess, wall off those fines. They cannot get pass a similar bill in the Senate because a filibuster exists. And so Mitch McConnell has announced today that what he's going to attempt to do is have two bills. One is going to fund the Department of Homeland Security, and the other will be, a bill that will say funds will be walled off and you cannot in any way do the deferred action. That, of course, won't pass. To the extent that it does, President Obama would be able to veto it. And it remains to be seen whether or not the conservatives in the House would actually pass a separate bill. If the Department of Homeland Security is not funded, about 80% of its workers would theoretically have to show up to work because they are deemed essential employees and would have to come to work without getting paid. Now, I say theoretically because after a couple of weeks, it's not like these people are being paid huge numbers of dollars. I mean, we're talking about people who are making $30,000 to $40,000 a year, many of whom may be living paycheck to paycheck. Some people may lose their cars or their homes over that time or not be able to eat. what we have, which I guess is somewhat inevitable, but it's pathetic nevertheless, is now we have, of course, a lot of talk of the potential terrorist threat in this country if we don't fund the Department of Homeland Security. And of course, I guess to a certain extent, there's some reality to this. But as we saw during the Bush administration, whenever there was, and the Bush administration went to this well quite often, whenever President Bush's approval ratings dropped, suddenly it was almost like it automatically triggered one of those color-coded Department of Homeland Security warnings. As soon as it dropped below 45% or something, all of a sudden the terror threat would go to like orange or magenta. I don't know what it was. I don't know what the color was. So now we have a supposed threat slash non-threat of the Mall of America. I don't know why it's always the Mall of America.
I just keep hearing you doing Bush being like, tell them we're going to hit the mall again.
Yeah, see? What's that, that big mall that's in America? Bingo! All right, yeah, that one. Mall of America. Yeah, that one. The guy. What was the name of that? I'm trying to think of that that store where they had all the like the vibrators and the fart cushy whoopee cushions. Spencer Gift. Tell them they're gonna hit Spencer Gifts. Nobody was ever gonna get their fake beer can that is spilled, or their Blacklight Tiger poster. It's gonna get blown up. Because the Islamo-fascists hate us for our black light posters.
I'm protecting your lava lamps, people.
That's right. How you going to get that itchy powder? You putting your friend's underwear. Did that. Did it. Been there. No. So, apparently, there was a video threat by the Somali terrorist group Al-Shabaab, where a mass militant claimed the group will attack shopping centers in the United States, Canada, and Europe. And so, Jay Johnson, the Homeland Security chief, went on NBC's Meet the Press and basically said, we sort of think it's a threat, but it's not really. And this is, of course, all part of the politics to intimidate the Republicans into voting into this, or at least I have no idea. I mean, I really don't know at this point. I don't even get the sense that the American public is paying that much attention to this. And really, so this is another situation, I think, where the Republicans really just have everything to lose and nothing really to gain. I have no doubt in the fever swamps of the right, they are still howling that President Obama has basically opened up this country to all sorts of brown people. But that doesn't seem to have much traction these days. In fact, when I was out in California and I was listening to right-wing radio, as I often do when I have the opportunity to drive, I just kept hearing the same FCC commissioner come on, some Republican, talking about how net neutrality was going to, government's going to, I don't know, I guess, cut off your porn or whatever it is. And they were really trying to hype this. I mean, I heard that same guest with the exact same talking points on multiple shows, both like local shows and national shows. They really got them out there. So I don't think the Department of Homeland Security situation is getting much salience. So a lot of this is just sort of kabuki on both sides. But the reality is that while Jay Johnson is talking about al-Shabaab terrorists from Somalia attacking a mall in Minnesota. I mean, look, there's no doubt in my mind that we're going to have a problem in the coming years with individuals responding to our continued program of drones and targeted assassinations. But the bottom line is, according to the Department of Homeland Security, an intelligence assessment circulated by DHS earlier in February that has now been reviewed by CNN says that the terror threat from right-wing sovereign citizen extremists is far more dangerous than anything we're going to get from al-Shabaab. Some federal and local law enforcement groups view the domestic terror threat from sovereign citizen groups as equal to, and in some cases greater than, the threat from foreign Islamic terror groups, such as ISIS. The DHS report, produced in coordination with the FBI, counts 24 violent sovereign citizen-related attacks around the U.S. since 2010. Among the findings from the intelligence assessment, sovereign citizen violence during the 2015 will occur most frequently during routine law enforcement encounters at suspects' homes, during enforcement stops, and at government offices. So to the extent that we should really be worried about this, it really and it's not just these sovereign citizens, or should I say extreme sovereign citizens, right? Don't want to put all the sovereign citizens in one basket. That would be mean. But also just random nut jobs going into a school or to a theater with their weapons. So I don't know. What we're seeing this week is a little bit. When you lump us all together, all us sovereign citizens, it's sort of unfair to our movement. There's extreme ones, and then there's more reasonable ones. Granted, we all share the same belief that counties are the genuine seat of power in this country. So what we're seeing this week, I don't know how it's going to play out, but I would imagine that Mitch McConnell is going to try and pass something. And they think there's going to be a couple of senators, the Democratic senators, who they're going to force into an uncomfortable vote over the deferred action stuff. But I'm not even convinced that's going to have salience with any Democratic senators. It still amazes me just sort of how the Republican Party didn't seem to have even like a plan B, even a plan A minus, nothing.
I think it's really interesting the way I agree in some ways that relying on the demographics is a problematic way of thinking about winning elections and, you know, the trends for Democratic majorities. But it is just kind of amazing to watch them. It's almost like they're just like Mexicans, people. Mexicans. We're talking about Mexicans and borders and Mexicans and the fact that there's – and everybody's like, yeah, right. Of course we should be – you know, having a path to citizenship and we should stop deportations. And they're almost like they're so flat-footed because they just don't get it. They just don't get that this doesn't work outside of their, you know.
And it doesn't even seem to be, you know, like, I mean, they're not even being able to fundraise on this stuff that much anymore. I mean, as far as I can tell, just based upon the different email lists that I sign up for, you know, it's all just seems to be they're work. They're obviously getting, you know, some advertising dollars from some of the larger telecommunications outfits because it's all this net neutrality. But I mean, this is supposed to be the big showdown. This week is supposed to be the big week. right? This is the big payoff from the Cromnibus. And well, they got nothing.
And what's so ironic is that they had that push right after Romney lost for a couple of weeks, or even people like Sean Hannity were saying, all right, we got to tone down all this anti-immigration stuff. That got pushed back. That failed.
Right.
And here they are. And they themselves, I mean, even when you have Sean Hannity saying, we need to tone this down, I don't know what more you need to hear.
Well, but the point is that their strategy has completely fallen apart. And I think part of that is just because I guess they didn't anticipate that President Obama would actually fight them on anything. And they just have no plan B. Meanwhile, speaking of no plan B, we are what now? A week away or so from Bibi Netanyahu speaking to Congress?
I didn't know that I thought everybody was on board. I'm coming, and the president is, he's been very supportive. I'm, of course, talking about Sheldon Adelson, and the speech will go forward.
So, and I guess Joe Biden's not coming, so Lindsey Graham has an opportunity to go on Sunday talk shows. And
a very excitable little man, that Lindsey Graham.
Well, so Netanyahu's visit ostensibly is to essentially scuttle the Iran-U.S. nuke deal that is taking place. I think at one point Netanyahu thought this was going to help him in the polls, too, in his election in Israel. It all blew up in their face when the Democratic caucus and the president basically showed the smallest amount of spine possible and basically said, we didn't invite him. We don't know why he's coming. And Vice President Biden has to, I don't know what he's got that day. He's got a dentist
he's
appointment.
He's traveling.
He's got a dentist appointment. So he can't come, and he's been putting it off for too long, and he's got to get a crown on it, and whatever.
Got to keep those pearly whites.
And so Netanyahu is coming ostensibly to scuttle the U.S.-Iran nuke deal. And just yesterday, Al Jazeera and The Guardian basically announced yesterday or over the weekend, they announced that they basically had a trove of cables which appear, and it's unclear, but it appears this is a huge leak that came from the South African version of the CIA, I guess, their intelligence services. And one of these, and most of these documents deal with human intelligence. In other words, this is not about how they collect data or whatnot. It is really just about human relations and human intelligence. And apparently one of these cables makes it clear, and this is, I should be clear, the South African intelligence services communicating to other intelligence services, including the U.S. intelligence services, including European intelligence services, and including to the Israeli intelligence service, the Mossad. So according to one of the spy cables, and again, it's unclear how The Guardian and Al Jazeera got a hold of this, Benjamin Netanyahu's dramatic declaration to world leaders in 2012, you'll remember he came to the UN with a picture. And when I say picture, I don't mean a photograph. I mean basically an animated, just someone did a drawing of a big bomb. Was it like a red bomb or something?
I don't even think it was red. I think it was just...
It was a picture of a bomb. And he said that, I think based on that artist's rendering of what a bomb would look like, that the Iranians were a year away from making a nuclear bomb. Well, it turns out, according to Mossad, the Israeli spying intelligence agency, not true. Not even remotely true. In a secret report shared with South Africa a few weeks after that speech at the UN in New York, Israel's intelligence agency concluded that Iran was, quote, not performing the activity necessary to produce weapons. These are from these documents, which are marked as confidential or top secret. They span a decade of global intelligence traffic from 2006 to December of last year. Like I said, it was leaked to the Al Jazeera investigative unit and shared with The Guardian. Other revelations in these documents include details of operations against Al-Qaeda, Islamic State, and other terrorist organizations, but also the targeting of environmental activists. In the coming days, we're going to see files that reveal the CIA attempted to establish contact with Hamas. South Korean intelligence targeted the leader of Greenpeace. Barack Obama threatened, and I'm not sure exactly what that means, it's in quotes, the Palestinian president to withdraw a bid for recognition of Palestine at the U.S. South African intelligence spied on a Russian on Russia over a $1 million joint satellite deal. But the point being of this leak about the Mossad's evaluation of what Netanyahu was saying in public is that he's coming next week to make probably the exact same claims.
My grandson Gilad has drawn this bomb on the picture. This shows where Iran is with the weapons. And so the Mossad, they are saying one thing. Of course, they are anti-Semitic. They hate Israel. This is why they work at Mossad. But my grandson has drawn this picture, and he is much more serious about our security.
His grandson, incidentally, 6 years old, using crayons.
Using crayons is very serious about Israel, and he knows that the U.S. is an easy thing to move. And we will do this together. And Mossad is nothing but Palestine apologists.
You know, Mossad, ex-Mossad heads have said this publicly,
yes,
that they support negotiations with Iran and that this would produce big benefits for Israel.
But it's not only a question of a policy difference. Well, now what we have is a difference on what are the facts. Now, if Netanyahu's intelligence agency is saying there is no indication, not a shred of evidence, that Iran is moving in any direction towards weaponizing anything, and Netanyahu gets out there and says, we have proof. I mean, I don't know where he gets his proof.
I told you a picture from...
I've seen the cartoons.
I'm being transparent with you because you are a mishpucha, even though you are the bad Jew. I'm trying to explain to you.
He spent too much time in Paris, I think.
I can't really.
All right, so this is the problem that he has now.
Except
no one is going to believe anything he says, and the ship has already sailed. Reports from AP, just I think today. Well, this is coming from yesterday. U.S. and Iran reported progress on a deal that would clamp down on Tehran's nuclear activities for at least 10 years. So remember, we're not even talking about weapons here because according to Iran, they're not in pursuit of weapons. They're in pursuit of only the ability to have nuclear power.
Their policy is intentionally ambiguous, but the
idea... Of course.
Yeah, of course. But the notion that it's an established hard fact that they want to weaponize it has never been
established
by anybody.
According to the Mossad, in 2012,
yes,
there was no indication.
Absolutely. And we've had reports from our own intelligence that said the same thing.
Of course. And so it's unclear. There's a March 31st deadline for this, so it is obviously still being negotiated. Iran apparently wants... Or the U.S. wanted to put basically a 20-year regime of strict controls on how much uranium Iran could enrich. And apparently the Iranians want somewhere around 5. And it seems like the two parties are starting to settle around 10 years. So it's difficult to know at this point, but I mean, you're seeing a concerted effort and simultaneously a failure. The concerted effort is to push ahead with this notion of negotiating with the Iranians. And the failure is this play by Netanyahu and the Republicans to get sanctions in place to scuttle these talks. I mean, this is pretty momentous stuff, because a month and a half ago, this could have gone the exact opposite way. A month and a half ago, 2 months ago, we were hearing, you know, it was a month and a half ago, we heard Menendez say, like, President Obama's State of the Union could have been written by the mullahs in Iran or whatever it was he was saying. And so this has gone in a completely different direction than what it appeared it could have 2 months ago. And this will be huge. I mean, if we can strike this deal with Iran, it'll be huge. I mean, I don't know what John McCain will do. I don't know, commit harikari on the Senate floor or something. I mean, what else is he going to talk about, for God's sakes? It'll be North Korea.
Or North Korea.
It'll be North Korea. Everything they did to the interview that prevented it from winning its Oscar. That's what we're going to hear from McCain next.
I just think it's very interesting because I think the function of Iran is very similar to Iraq in some ways in terms of lying about the intelligence. But I don't think Bibi has ever even wanted military action against Iran. I think he just wants Iran there as a placeholder to fearmonger and distract.
I think there are elements in the Israeli government. There's no doubt in my mind.
There are elements. I don't know if he does.
He may not.
The odd thing about him is that he's relatively cautious.
Well,
that's
I think that's
one of the reasons that they've never actually moved. But he wants it there, always in place to distract.
Of course. It is. You have a big boogeyman outside of your borders, and it helps you domestically. That is
what were
a
you saying
long
about
time.
What was the comment you made before the show about the purpose of Israel and
the primary pivot point of Israel in this country is a bulwark, some type of bulwark against Iranian expansion, whatever that means. And the idea of, I mean, there's going to be a huge identity crisis amongst, it seems like to me, a certain segment of the Israelis, certain segment of conservative Israeli support, and the neocons, if Iran no longer becomes this boogeyman that is looking to give our enemies a nuclear suitcase that they can drop off in New York, I mean, I don't know what these people are going to do. They're going to really, honestly, it's going to have to be, they're going to have to turn their attention to Africa, or it's going to be North Korea. Well, I mean, suddenly we're going to hear about how Al-Shabaab or whatever it is going to be the problem.
Well, and specifically with the Israelis, it becomes like, okay, so again, back to the Palestinians, back to what you're not doing in that process. And I think that that's why part of why here's some – the other quick question I have for you is how does it – like it just – I noticed the other day that now when these pictures get released when they're negotiating with the Iranians, and it's very normal to see like Kerry and Zarif – shaking hands, talking, you know, you doing normal diplomatic stuff. And I'm wondering particularly for you, because you like relations with Iran have not been normal for, you know, at least since the hostage crisis. Is it kind of like, is it just normal now, or is it still kind of mind blowing to just watch this shift so quickly, relatively speaking?
I just don't think that people it feels like it's been coming for 3 or 4 years. It's just – I think what is more surprising to me is just that the salience of you're upsetting Bibi is just not
– right.
It's just not there. So like it was even 2 or 3 years ago.
Yes, and – right.
Exactly.
Well, and that's part of what he's done, though, is by making himself basically just another Republican politician, which if I was an Israeli strategist,
I
would be enraged.
I think the biggest turn, frankly, in terms of this dynamic is the loss of the sort of liberal, the centrist slash left-leaning, supposedly, hawks on Israel. Like, you know, the whole class of people like Peter Beinart, who are no longer sort of flacking, who are protecting that, you know, who are scaring politicians on the nominal left or on the left of the spectrum from having at least some rationality, some. And I understand we're talking relatively speaking here. If there was still that cohort of people like Beinart, and I'm just using him,
like a genuine liberal Zionist,
yes.
Whatever you take with that term, you know.
Yes, but of those type of flacks, if they still existed, I'm not convinced this doesn't play out in a very different way. If they still existed in the form that they existed before. And
maybe J Street has been marginally more successful than people realize, potentially.
I don't know if it's J Street is a function of that, but it is.
It's in concert with it to
perhaps,
a degree.
Perhaps. Yeah. Perhaps. But it is it's interesting to see. And again, you know, what does John McCain talk about at that point? It's got to be North Korea. We could put bets on it. I guess, right? And then the only other aspect of this, though, of course, is, you know, what does Saudi Arabia do? Because they are, short of the Israeli right, Saudi Arabia would be the next biggest player that is really terrified of this type of normalization. And I imagine we're going to see, you know, more funding. I mean, I'm not convinced that their initial funding of ISIS wasn't a function of that.
Just to add to it really briefly, I was at this a couple weeks ago. I was at an Iranian council event, and I was talking to some guy who's, you know, pretty involved in this sort of thing. And he actually said, from the perspective of what's going on in Washington, he thought the Saudi lobby is a much bigger threat to actually killing this than the Israeli lobby.
I would imagine.
Israeli lobby is much louder. They're much more. But the Saudi lobby and the Saudi hatred of this deal runs much deeper because there isn't a division like between Mossad and
that's
the realists
right.
and all this.
That's right.
There's no division. It's uniform.
Right.
They hate it. They don't
There's
want
no
it.
Element of Saudi society or politics because their politics are fairly relatively uniform, at least on this issue, right? It's
pretty uniform.
How much should we oppress our own people?
That's the other thing is like the context of how it's uniform is,
right.
I mean, because, you know, the king who died, he really was a reformer in that context.
Right.
And that tells you a lot.
Right. So I would imagine the Saudis and that is a lot more scary in some respects because I'm not convinced that ISIS wasn't their initial funding of ISIS wasn't a function of that. And they just like, oops, this was too virulent of
well,
a
strain. They were funding all of those groups.
Right.
And, you know, so and Nusra is playing
right.
exactly the role they want them
right.
to play. ISIS just got out of control.
Yep. All right. Let's move to I want to talk about what's going on in Wisconsin. Scott Walker is about to sign, or I think he's going to have the opportunity to sign and will do so, a right-to-work law in Wisconsin, sort of bringing this thing full circle. It's unclear what the unions are going to do in Wisconsin, but despite the fact that he's been denying for years that he would – well, he wasn't denying that he would sign it. He was always denying that it would ever end up on his desk. I should also say that there is a case in front of the Supreme Court where we've talked about this in the past. There have been agency fees cases. There was a with private, as you may or may not know, with private unions, the idea of agency fees still existed, that one could be if you were in a union shop, that you could you would have to pay fees to a union, limited, not less than dues, but fees, I guess, to – wait a second. Let me get this straight. Agency fees. And there's a case in front of the Supreme Court that may threaten these agency fees for public sector unions. I'm trying to find the name of the case, and I don't have the – little rusty, folks. I was out in California. I was living the life, sitting by the pool at the Embassy Suites in Glendale, California. Not really sitting by the pool, but all right. We will talk about the right to work in Wisconsin, and also this climate scientist who just accidentally forgot to report that he was getting that much money from the Koch brothers and from some petroleum.
Can I just say what I really don't understand about that whole story, and we'll get to it in the fun half, is there's already so much money to be made in just the straight global warming science. It's like a bonanza, you know? So why would you go and make less money by taking money from the Cokes and the petroleum industry?
What do you mean? Are you being facetious?
I'm being very facetious.
I see what you're saying. A couple $100,000 a year. The interesting thing about this guy was that he would basically – so you know how, like, I guess, like, you, if you're a magazine writer, you send proposals to magazine editors, like, hey, I want to do a story on these protests or these groups running these protests, or I want to do a story on podcasters, or I want to do a story. He would basically send these prospectuses to these climate denial organizations, see which ones they would fund. Yeah. Unbelievable. All right, we're going to take a quick break. The number is 646-257-3920. Oh, folks, a reminder, this program relies on your support to continue. We are getting very close to the Indiegogo campaign. I really do think it's possible we're going to launch it on Monday. And I think we're actually going to do it. As much as I am loathe to. I don't like to do
Matt and I have basically needed to do therapy on Sam to get this to happen.
Also, you can support this program by buying your crap by if you buy crap from Amazon, buying it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. If you buy crap from Amazon, all you got to do is go to majorityreportkickback.com, click on the Amazon link, bookmark it. That's your Amazon. You will notice no difference. We get a kickback. It helps. Why give that extra cash to Jeff Bezos? Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Get the Majority Report blend. Use the coupon Majority, get 10% off. All right, the number is 646-257-3920. You can pick up the app for free at majorityapp.com. It will be featured on an upcoming episode of Marin on IFC. Yes.
That's cool.
Yes. And then I'm going to sue them for using it. That's my plan. Please don't say anything to them.
Oh, God, that would be a great story.
That would be a great story. You can IM me via the app. Oh, here we go. I just turned on my app. All right, we'll be back in just a moment.